From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Brandon drives it, puts it up, off left, got it! As time runs out, Brandon Jennings with the score!
What is up, beautiful people? What an exciting game last night. The Detroit Pistons knocking off the defending NBA champions in their home field. I mean, unbelievable. Unbelievable game. Brandon Jennings with the game-winning layup off the glass. I went nuts. I'm pretty sure you did, too, if you saw the game. I tell you what, this Pistons squad has proven that, yeah, maybe this win streak is no fluke. Maybe the Pistons have turned the table now. Maybe getting rid of Josh Smith was the right move. You think? We'll be talking about the Pistons' big win over the Spurs. And they also have another opportunity tonight to etch another big, formidable victory over the Dallas Mavericks, a team who has also won six straight. We'll talk about the Pistons. We'll also invite Kevin Gale of WLNS-TV6 to talk about his experience from being down in Dallas, Texas for the Cotton Bowl. He'll also chat about his MSU media game for the MSU hockey team. That was fun stuff. If you got to catch Channel 6 News last night, it was fun seeing Kevin experience that. And also, Bob Every, the chairman of the Greater Lansing Sports Hall of Fame, will join me to talk about the induction of John Smoltz into the Baseball Hall of Fame and also about the 2015 class for the Greater Lansing Sports Hall of Fame. All of that and so much more, but let's start the show like we always do here on Current Sports. Here we go. It's your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners for this January 7th. All right, folks, let's start off with the Baseball Hall of Fame. Randy Johnson, Pedro Martinez, and Waverly High School graduate John Smoltz, a trio of star pitchers who dominated in an era of offense, were elected to baseball's Hall of Fame yesterday along with Craig Biggio, the first time since 1955 that Rider selected four players in 1 year. Now, Smoltz became just the fourth Michigan native to be inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame, going in with 82.9% of the vote and as one of the rare players to make the Hall of his first attempt. Now, Johnson, Martinez, and Smoltz easily earned induction on their first tries, and Biggio made it on his third attempt after falling two votes shy last year. Now, they all will be enshrined out in Cooperstown, New York, on July 26th. Hats off to all of them, more specifically, John Smoltz, the Lansing native. Wow, that's unbelievable. All right. Jim Harbaugh has hired DJ Durkin to be his defensive coordinator at Michigan. Now, Durkin was the defensive coordinator at Florida the past two seasons and served as the Gators' interim head coach in the Birmingham Bowl on January 3rd after Will Muschamp was dismissed. Now, Durkin coached under Harbaugh at Stanford from 2007 to 2009 as the defensive ends coach and special teams coordinator. The University of Michigan men's basketball team picked up its first road conference victory last night, defeating Penn State 73-64 inside the Bryce Jordan Center. Now, junior Caris LeVert posted a team-high 18 points and 4 rebounds in the victory. LeVert shot 6 of 8 for the night and made both of his attempts from 3. Now, sophomore Zach Irvin also chipped in with 17 points. He went 6 of 9 for shooting and a career-high 9 rebounds, while his classmate Derek Walton Jr. added 12 points and 6 boards. Now, the Maize and Blue returns to Ann Arbor on Saturday afternoon to take on Minnesota inside Chrysler Center. Now, tip-off is scheduled for 1 p.m., and the game will be televised on ESPNU. And again, how about those Pistons? The Pistons, winners of 5 straight by an average of 18.2 points, stretched their winning streak to 6 by spotting the defending champion San Antonio Spurs an 18-point lead, then came back to lead by 10, and then won it on a Brandon Jennings probing runner off the glass with 1/10 of a second to play. Now, the Spurs scored 38 points in the paint in the first half, the Pistons 20. The tables turned, however. The second half numbers were 38 and 10. Pistons, Monroe, Greg Monroe, that is, added 17 and 11 to Drummond's 20 17. Now, the Pistons have another opportunity to turn heads tonight at 8:30 p.m. when they take on the Dallas Mavericks, a team that also has won six straight games. So somebody's win streak will come to an end tonight. All right, the Detroit Red Wings also picked up a dub last night. Benoit Pouliot took a four-minute sparing penalty late in the game to tie the game, and the Red Wings scored a pair of power play goals to pull away 4-2 victory over Edmonton. Now, Jimmy Howard made 21 saves and earned his 11th consecutive victory over the Edmonton Oilers. The Red Wings will also be back in action tonight, taking on the Calgary Flames at 9:30 p.m., the third game of a six-game road trip. All right, Jameis Winston won't be back in a Florida State uniform next season, his father said on Wednesday, as the quarterback will instead enter the NFL draft. Now, initially, Antoine Winston said his son planned to wait until after the College Football Playoff National Championship game to announce a decision, but Jameis Winston came to a firm decision last night that he was ready for the big leagues. Now, Antoine Winston said his son received a first-round grade from the NFL Draft Advisory Committee, which really solidified his decision. All right, a spokesman for boxing great Muhammad Ali says he has been released from a hospital after recovering from a severe urinary tract infection. Now, Ali's spokesman, Bob Goodell, says he's back home after being released from a hospital on Tuesday night. Ali has homes in Arizona, right here in Michigan, and Kentucky, but Goodell did not say where Ali went after his hospital stay. And sad news in the UFC. UFC lightweight heavyweight champion John Jones tested positive for traces of cocaine before his eighth title defense on Saturday in Las Vegas, according to the Nevada State Athletic Commission. Now, NSAC Executive Director Bob Bennett confirmed to ESPN.com yesterday that Jones tested positive for benzoylconine, a metabolic of cocaine. Now, Jones informed the NCSA that he had admitted himself into a drug treatment cancer center. All right. Well, not cancer center. Excuse me. Drug treatment center, folks. Well, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Folks, again, if you want to call in and give your thoughts on anything that we talk about today, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. As always, here on Current Sports, so much to talk about, so little time. And again, folks, you know, in honor of John Schmoltz, a local legend from right here in Lansing, had a brief stint at Lansing Catholic High School and spent the majority of his high school career with Lansing Waverly. Many of you probably know of the moment that John still calls to this day as his favorite moment in his entire playing career. Happened to be the 1985 Diamond Classic versus Lansing Sexton, a dramatic game-winning home run from John Schmoltz himself deep into left field that won the game. His favorite memory, I tell you what, and the Diamond Classic has become a staple event here in the Lansing community, here in just the community of Michigan in general. Folks, I'm sure many of you out there listening have fond memories of John Schmoltz's playing career, not only in the pros, but right here in Lansing, Michigan. And today, our current sports question of the day, we're prompting you all to call in and share your favorite John Schmoltz memory. What made him such a special guy, and what was your reaction upon hearing that he will grace the Baseball Hall of Fame this July? Call in, folks, and share your John Schmoltz memories, 517-355-9527. We'll be taking your calls again all the way up until the end of our show at 2 p.m. Fun stuff. And I've only met John once. I got a chance to interview him when I was a reporter at WLNS TV6 when he had come into the area and it was speaking at a charity event. Got a chance to meet him along with Fred Heumann. Fred actually introduced me to John. But, man, he was just such a nice guy upon the brief interaction that I had with him. But I'm sure, again, there are many of you that probably either know him or have had a conversation with him, maybe even played with him during his career here in Lansing. So, again, call in 517-355-9527. Also, want to remind you all the Current Sports TV tapes tonight at 6 p.m. here at the Communication Arts and Sciences Building, where the WKAR TV studios are located. I'll be sitting down with Lansing State Journal, Michigan State sports reporter, Chris Solari. Yes, he's a good friend here on Current Sports, and he gives great insight as to all things MSU. We'll be chatting about the Cotton Bowl. We'll be chatting about the MSU men's basketball team. We'll be chatting about Jim Harbaugh getting hired down at U of M, and so much more. You'll also get to see footage from the Cotton Bowl, post-game celebration, all of that good stuff, and so much more. If you want to be a part of that live studio audience, just simply go to WKAR.org and sign up online for free. Then it's just a matter of showing up, all right? All right, now I'll invite the man behind the glass, Alex Sharg, our fantastic engineer here on Current Sports. How you doing, Alex?
Al, I'm doing pretty well. I mean, the Pistons winning six straight. I'm seeing posts saying online, raise the banner. The banner is back. People are already jumping on the Pistons bandwagon like it's a championship year. I am in shock, man.
Well, first off, as far as raising any banners here, let's pump our brakes a little bit. Yeah. Six straight. I mean, this is the longest winning streak going back to December of 2006.
Did you see any of that? Oh. I mean, on my social media last night.
Oh, I did. Oh, I definitely
saying,
did.
Raise the banner. Can you believe that?
And,
I don't know.
And I think more of it was maybe jokingly. You know what I mean? There was a hilarious post that I saw. I actually posted by Jamel Hill of ESPN. Of course, Jamel is also an MSU alum. But she posted a funny picture of a championship banner getting raised with the Pistons surrounded by it. And it said, 2014, the year we waived Josh Smith. Hilarious post. So yeah, there was a lot of that going on last night. I mean, and deservedly so to a certain extent. Again, I think it was more jokingly because the Pistons, again, they haven't had this long of a win streak dating all the way back to 2006. Pretty remarkable stuff. Again, this franchise has gone through a lot of changes in the coaching realm from the player perspective as well. Ever since they won a championship in 2004, and finally the Pistons are being talked about, because anytime you get a win over the defending NBA champion, San Antonio Spurs, and you do it on the road at that, and it pushes your streak to six, naturally, there's going to be a certain buzz that follows that. So for me, and you guys know, I'm a big Detroit Pistons fan. We'll start off our show with that, Alex, just real briefly before we get to our first guest on today's show, before we bring in Kevin Gill of WLNS TV6. Again, Alex, this was so impressive for me because, again, if you look at it, for me, what really sparked this win for Detroit last night, it started with defense. Detroit's defense has seemed to turn up about 20 notches ever since the release of Josh Smith. And it's so remarkable because in the previous five games, leading to the five-game win streak for this Detroit Piston team, again, as you just heard, folks, the Pistons were beating its opponents by an average of 18.3 points. I mean, that is truly remarkable. So they're not just beating people. They're blowing them out. Now, again, you're not going to blow out the San Antonio Spurs. I mean, this is a team, again, they are the defending NBA champions. They have such a laden of veteran leadership led by a veteran coach, a great Hall of Fame coach, shooing for the Hall of Fame, and Greg Popovich. You're not going to blow out the San Antonio Spurs. But still, to beat them on the road in that fashion, that's certainly impressive. And the third quarter was really the key for me, because if you look at the third quarter, the Pistons outscored San Antonio 33-19. It was sparked by that defensive presence, getting steals, clogging the passing lanes, forcing San Antonio to shoot threes, not allowing them to get easy buckets in the paint. If they were, they were getting fouled hard and going to the line. And how about the play of DJ Augustine? I thought he was great last night. DJ Augustine, for me, he was the spark plug. He was the X factor in that game for the Pistons to really start rolling. If you look at his numbers last night, he was 8 for 18, 19 points. He was also getting others involved, 5 assists. He was taking it right into the heart of that San Antonio defense, allowing them to either foul him or get an easy layup. DJ Augustine was spectacular, and I love the combination of DJ and Brandon Jennings, because Brandon Jennings has really been the focal point of this winning streak, Alex, to be honest with you. He's been playing out of his mind. He's been the league. He's been the team leader in points throughout this entire win streak realm, but he was struggling last night. And DJ saw that he was struggling and stepped up his game. Because Brandon Jennings, he shot horrible. He was 5 for 18. He had 7 assists. But again, he couldn't hit anything. DJ came in, and it was a key component to keeping that game close, Alex, period.
Yeah, back to DJ. I mean, the pick and roll with him and Drummond and him and Monroe, the Spurs didn't know how to stop it. Most of his points came from getting a pick, going straight down the lane. They couldn't really switch on him because DJ Augustine has that quickness. Augustine just laying up those floaters, those layups. I mean, you saw it, Al. I mean, you even heard Blahat and Kelser say it. they didn't know what to do with DJ Augustin on the pick and roll. They really didn't. And overall in the win streak, if they lost this game, I think overall it wouldn't be, it's just a fluke. They played really well. And even if they didn't win this game, if it came down to the final stretch, you played well against a championship team like that against the Spurs. You got to have some credit. And Andre Drummond, man, how about that? I mean, he kind of reminded me in the way of like when Shaq was on the Lakers, when he was just so big, you just couldn't stop him.
Yeah,
I mean, he was moving Splitter. He was moving Bonner left and right. That guy is a force to be reckoned with, all-star caliber. That might be a franchise piece.
And I think you can say that Andre Drummond had the best game of his entire career last night, I think. I mean, he had 20 points. He had 17 rebounds. He had a block. I mean, he was unbelievable. He was everywhere. And also him coming with Greg Monroe. Greg Monroe was also great last night. He had 17 points, 11 rebounds for him. I've always said, even dating back to last year, maybe even the year before that, that the offense has to run through those two. Because those two can get points easily. Greg Monroe is so fundamentally polished. Andre Drummond is such a big force. He's a tough guard for anyone in the league. It has to run for those two because once those two start to get scoring, you start to see opponents start to double down on those two, and in turn, that opens up things around the perimeter for the guards. And if you look at it, I mean, on the boards, I mean, Detroit is fifth in the league in rebounds. And I tell you what, Drummond and Monroe are starting now to be a defensive presence down low. Again, you talk about those easy buckets that at the beginning of this year were easily given up by the Detroit Pistons. If San Antonio was going to the paint, if it was being fed into the paint, you know, to Tim Duncan, or if there was a drive happening between Manu Ginobili or even Tony Parker in that first half, they were having to earn those buckets. They were not easily just put up. And I thought it was very impressive. And again, this all stems to Stan Van Gundy. Stan Van Gundy is bringing a new mindset, a collective mindset on this Pistons team that, hey, in order to win games, you have to play defense. Another alarming stat for those out there just following this win streak for the Pistons. Up until last night, Alex, the Pistons had hit 66 triples. 66 in the previous five games, really relying on that three-point arc to extend leads and to blow out people. Last night, they only hit three of those. Three of 19, actually. They shot horrible, horrible from the three-point line. They couldn't buy a three-point bucket. But again, the real test when you're going against a big opponent, a formidable opponent, is if you can win without hitting the three-point ball. They showed that last night. Anytime you go 3 for 19 and you beat the defending NBA champions, that is saying a lot. And now people are finally starting to talk about my Detroit Pistons. Finally. I never thought that I was going to lead a show talking about the Detroit Pistons. We finally have an opportunity to do that. And you better believe, Alex, you knew it was coming. That I was going to lead the show with that today, okay?
Oh, absolutely. I knew it was coming. But would you be willing to say that this team has totally changed? I mean, granted, the Spurs, although they lost to the Pistons, they almost gave that game away. How many free throws were missed down the stretch? This is a Spurs team that is fundamentally sound, and that was not the Spurs team that you would normally see during the year, I would argue.
Well, let's be honest. I mean, if you look at that game last night, Tony Parker, he sat out the entire second half. So that's a big asterisk as well because, I mean, Tony Parker, I mean, hey, we debated this last year. I think Tony Parker, when he's healthy, he is the best point guard in the league, in my opinion. He sat out the entire second half. He's still not 100% this year, so that's a big blow. And also, Kawhi Leonard, who was also a big puzzle piece to why San Antonio won the championship last year, he's still out and not healthy. So you got Ginobili, and you got, you know, Tim Duncan, and then you got, you know, guys like Patty Mills and so on and so forth. Those are two pieces that were missing. But still, this is the Detroit Pistons we're talking about. Anytime you beat the defending champions in the league and you're the Pistons, that's big news. It's big news. So, hey, is it a fluke? I don't know. We still have to see. It's still early. Let's not start talking about championship banners here. Six in a row is all fine and dandy. But still, hey, an NBA season is a marathon. It's not a sprint. It's still a lot of games to play, and this season is still in its infancy. Am I happy right now? Yeah, and I'm sure there's many fans out there that's happy that people are starting to talk about this team. But we still got a long way to go. Can we agree with that, Alex? There we go. All right. Well, I'm excited because the man, the myth, the legend has just walked in the door here at the WKRT radio studios, he is Kevin Gill, my former co-worker and friend, WLNS TV 6 sports reporter and anchor. He is here to talk about all things Cotton Bowl, MSU men's basketball, and hey, folks, he even hit the ice. If I'm understanding correctly, he hit the ice yesterday and played in a great media day event, which we'll get to as well. KG, how you doing, my man?
Hit the ice may be generous. Because, actually, no, it's accurate. Because I dropped to the ice a couple times. Because, again, I'm from San Francisco.
Right.
So we just didn't have that much hockey out west. We didn't have any ice. We probably had two rinks within 20, 25 miles of where I grew up. So we just didn't have a lot of chances to play. But, you know, Tom Anastas does this media event every year. And, you know, once my buddy Justin Rose from WXYZ helped me lace up my skates and
right.
get all my gear on, it was like Mighty Mike Hockey. Like, all the media guys needed help from the coaches and the team to get all the gear on. So once we got the stuff on, we had a good time out there. Did a little skills competition, fastest skater, hardest shot. And Al, baby, I'm telling you, I woke up this morning and my right arm is killing me. I got a dead arm.
Really?
I tell you, I have so much respect for these MSU hockey players because it is a hard game, man. We played a little 3-on-3. People don't realize how athletic these guys really are. They think, oh, okay, you're sliding around on ice. How athletic could this be? But I'm telling you, man, it was one of the best workouts. I'm feeling muscles in my legs that I didn't even know I had. It
right.
was unbelievable.
That
and
is
it was a really great experience.
Now, you know, when you talk about those different competitions, I got to ask, KG, did you win any of them?
Well, I did score in the shootout. I went top shelf.
Okay.
You know, went over the goalie's shoulder, and he was pretty good. He had some game, so I went top shelf. No one expects anything out of me.
Right.
So I gave him the old okie doke, little triple deke from Mighty Ducks 2. So
okay, nice.
I was pretty happy with it, and I'm sore enough that I should be recovered by next year's media game.
My
I should be
goodness.
Ready.
Kev, that's,
I'm
that's...
popping Advil like Skittles today.
Right. Now, I heard about the event, and I tell you what, when I heard about it, I'm like, brothers, don't skate, KG. I was like, you know what? Okay, this would be a fun event. First off, okay,
you know,
there were two reasons.
I was wondering why you weren't out there, Al.
Yeah, well, it's two reasons. One, it was at 1 o'clock. You know, we're
but
on the air at
Curry
Sports.
You're an athletic young man. You could have come out there
yeah.
and given it a try.
You know, I was thinking about it. Well, one, it was around 1 o'clock. We're on the air at 1 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And then two, again, brothers, don't skate. I've never played hockey before. Now, I've done a little bit of ice skating
You're
downtown
from
Detroit.
You're from Hockeytown, man. How have you never
yeah.
played?
But still,
see,
you know.
I have an excuse. I'm from the Golden State.
Right.
We don't play hockey out west.
Right. Well, I tell you what, you will be hard pressed to find a brother who has played hockey where I'm from, okay, Kevin? I'm
Mike
just saying.
Greer.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's it.
He's from Detroit.
That's the pick of the litter. That's the pick of the litter
yeah.
right there, Kevin. That's like one in a thousand
hey,
of us, okay?
Anson Carter, Al. Anson Carter.
Michigan
I don't even know
State
who that
alum.
Is. Oh, yeah, that is, okay, Anson, that is true. But still, you're naming
Brothers
names.
Brothers are playing hockey, Al.
All right, okay. Well, maybe I'm coming with excuses. I'm going to try it one day, but that day ain't today. All right. Well, Kevin, I want to, you know, I'm definitely glad to have you on the show today
yeah,
because I tell you what.
Thanks for having me back. Always good to be here.
Always, always, Kevin. Now, I want to bring you on to talk about your experience being down in Texas, because I tell you what, looking at that game at home, I mean, there were many Spartan fans who were like me, you know, losing their minds watching that game. It was one of the best college football games I've ever seen, one of the biggest comebacks in Spartan history.
Mm-hmm.
Just talk about, first off, the experience of being down there in Dallas, because you were there, of course, days before the
seven
game
days
actually
we
kicked
were
off.
Down there. Yeah, we were
7 days.
For a whole week.
Talk about how it was to be down in Dallas.
You know, it's hard to compare anything to the Rose Bowl, because when you get to Pasadena and you see the San Gabriel Mountains and you see the sun setting and you see those colors and the bright sunshine and the pomp and circumstance of it, nothing beats the game day atmosphere of the Rose Bowl in Pasadena. However, hospitality-wise, entertainment-wise, just the sheer fact of taking care of the team, letting them enjoy the city, do a lot of different things, the Cotton Bowl is the A-plus number one bowl game in the New Year Six. I mean, this was an absolutely spectacular operation from start to finish. The players absolutely loved it. They took great care of the coaches. And one of the things that I was really surprised to hear from fans was when they started coming back in that game and actually finished off that comeback, people were saying, I can't believe they did it. I can't believe they came back to win this. Well, you haven't watched the last couple MSU bowl games. They do this every year. I've
right.
covered four MSU bowl games now for WLNS TV 6 here in Lansing. Every single bowl, Outback, Buffalo Wild Wings, Rose, Cotton, Michigan State was down double digits in those games. I was already writing my post-game stories when the comebacks began. Because this team under Mark D'Antonio, I don't know what has happened the last couple years. I asked coaches and players over and over down there in Dallas, what has changed about this team? Because you remember, Al, the first 4 years, Mark D'Antonio was getting labeled as a guy that couldn't win, quote-unquote, the big game.
Exactly.
He was 0-4 out of the gate in bowl games, hadn't really taken that big step yet. There had been some success. There had been the shared Big Ten championship. But going into that Outback Bowl in 2011, people weren't sure if this was going to be the guy to take Michigan State to the next level. Now you've got a Michigan State team that you can never count out in these games. And a lot of that has to do with Connor Cook. Because remember, that Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl 3 years ago, here's my favorite trivia stat about that.
Mm-hmm.
Le'Veon Bell actually had more passing yards in the Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl than quarterback Andrew Maxwell.
I remember that because you actually brought up in the air one time when you were anchoring. I'm like, whoa, that's unbelievable. That's a tit for tat right there, right?
Exactly. And it's not that Connor Cook came in and blew up the world when he came off the bench. I think he went 4-for-15, completed his passes,
right,
but led them down the stretch. And that's the thing that amazes me about this kid. He has the shortest memory I've ever seen. You know, you think back to the pick six he threw in the Rose Bowl, and you're thinking, oh, here we go again. You think about some mistakes he made in the Big Ten Championship. He immediately comes back out and gets the job done. On that final drive in the Cotton Bowl, after the blocked field goal by Marcus Rush, they return it all the way back. They had a fourth down and 10, I believe, after three horrible, horrible Connor Cook incompletions. Weren't even close.
Right.
He threads the needle to Tony Lippin on the sideline, and you're thinking, okay, they're going to come back and win this game because every time they're down, Connor Cook and these guys just dig them out of the hole. It's really impressive to watch.
So was that the general buzz? I mean, you being in the press box watching that game, I mean, what was the feeling like up in that press box from you and other local media members? I mean, did you guys have a feeling that, okay, we've seen it before, like you said, we've seen this story written before, they're going to come back and win this game? I mean, what was the general feeling?
When Connor Cook was driving Michigan State down early in the fourth quarter, and when I say threw an interception, I mean he literally flipped the ball to Baylor, we thought, okay, that's it. Because Baylor ran it back for a touchdown, but there was that block in the back on the return. They're down 20. They just threw an interception. Baylor's scoring at will. Game's over. We're writing our stories. We go down to the field, and that's when things really started to change. They get the onside kick, score a couple times. The blocked field goal, we were actually down on the field for that, and the roar from that small but passionate MSU crowd. Because you have to remember, Al, they were about an hour and a half from Waco. I mean,
right,
this was a Baylor game.
It was
home
a home
game.
Yeah, it was a home game for him, right.
Absolutely. So when the momentum in the building changed and Connor Cook finally believed, he even told me after the game, he said, I was horrible. Just horrible. But he got the W. And that's what this kid does. He's not always going to light things up. I mean, this team scored a lot of points this year. But when they were down in that game, as corny as it sounds, they tell you, oh, you know, we always believed we were going to win this game. They really did.
Folks, if you're just now listening to us on here on Current Sports, we're talking with Kevin Gale, WLNS TV6 sports reporter and anchor. Now, Kevin, I tell you what, to get a W over Baylor, the number 5 team this year in college football, I mean, what sort of statement do you think Mark D'Antonio and his squad made with this win? What was the general feeling from D'Antonio and his players?
Well, the interesting tone of the bowl week was set early on when Pat Narduzzi took the head coaching job at Pitt. And we were, you know, weren't sure if he was going to come back to actually coach that bowl game. And, you know, the players and coaches won't admit this, but that was certainly a distraction. Because, I mean, Pat Narduzzi had so many other things going on. They were trying to figure out what they were going to do next with their defensive coordinators. Obviously, they're promoting Harlan Barnett and Mike Tressel. Two guys have been on staff. That'll be a very good move. They'll have a steady hand on the wheel when Narduzzi leaves.
Right.
So from the beginning, there was this idea that this is going to be the final bow for Narduzzi, one of the best defenses in the country, the no-fly zone against one of the best offenses in the country. And that matchup never really happened because Baylor really was getting whatever it wanted offensively in that game.
Yeah, especially through the air. I mean, over 600 yards passing, and that's a Cotton Bowl record. Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I mean, in a lot of ways, that kind of set a tone early on about Michigan State needs to send Pat Narduzzi out the right way. But even more importantly, you have to look at bowl games as the first game of next year because college football is a game of perception. What people believe to be true becomes true. We saw it again this year. People assumed, perceived that Ohio State was better than the two champions from the Big 12, Baylor and TCU. So then it became true. The committee pushed them through. That's the magic of human error. That's the magic of a committee. So what Michigan State did here by beating a top five team, number five Baylor, they set themselves on the right track for next season. Because where you start in the rankings, Al, as you understand, in a lot of ways is going to dictate how far up you can move and how you can move your way into the playoff. Because the big thing about Baylor this year was they were mad. They wanted to prove to people that they were a great team. Michigan State wanted to prove, excuse me, Baylor also wanted to prove that they should have been in the playoff.
In the playoff, right.
What Michigan State wanted to prove, look, Michigan State lost two games this year. They lost to Oregon on the road.
Mm-hmm.
That team is in the national title game.
Exactly.
They lost to Ohio State at home.
Also in a national title.
That team is in the national title game. And the only other elite team they really played, you could barely make an argument now that Nebraska was a good team. The schedule was a little softer than they expected.
Yeah.
The only other truly elite team that they played was Baylor. So had they lost that game, you've got to look at that season going, okay, Michigan State was a good team that beat all the teams they should, but they never beat any truly elite teams. So they played three teams in the final top five. They beat one out of the three. That really sent a message that this was an elite team. They just didn't get the job done at one of the toughest places to play in the country. And they fell victim to JT Barrett, the quarterback from Ohio State, who just happened to be an offensive whiz kid. And now Cardale Jones is doing the same thing. They can just put any quarterback they want in at Ohio State
right now.
It's unbelievable.
I could probably put on an Ohio State jersey and go out there and play quarterback and have success. I mean, it's like a factory. It's unbelievable. Now, Kevin, there's also news that broke right on the brink of that game out in Ann Arbor. Harbaugh, Jim Harbaugh was hired as the head football coach out there. And I tell you what, it became the number one sports story in the entire nation automatically. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm understood that D'Antonio was actually asked his thoughts on that hire. You asked him yourself. What did he say?
We were at Cotton Bowl Media Day. And it's typically one of the final big media events where they have all the players and coaches available. Literally, they sit them all down in a back room at the stadium, and you can talk to any player on the team. I mean, the long snapper, the water boy. I mean, you can literally talk to just about anybody.
Yeah.
So they sat Mark D'Antonio down, and people are asking him Cotton Bowl questions. And you got to understand, Al, I've already been there 5 days. I've asked Mark D'Antonio every question under the sun.
What else can you ask,
about the Cotton Bowl? Yeah, he's heard it all before, and he's been asked these same questions every which way to Sunday. So, knowing that Fred Heumann, our sports director from WLNS TV6, was reporting from the Harbaugh presser in Ann Arbor, I asked Mark D'Antonio. I first asked him, do you happen to know Jim Harbaugh personally? Do you have a relationship with him? And he kind of shrugged it off and said, no, I've never met him, but I know a lot of people that do know him because, obviously, the coaching community is a small one. I then followed up by saying, what is it like to have another great coach, and I was going to continue on by saying have another great coach in the Big Ten East Division, which is becoming a hotbed for great coaches, Mark D'Antonio included.
Exactly.
And it's certainly not unfair to say that Jim Harbaugh is a great head coach. He worked wonders at Stanford. He went to three straight NFC championships. He took the 49ers to a Super Bowl. I would go ahead and say it's fact. Jim Harbaugh is a great coach. So
right,
I didn't feel that was an unfair question. So I said, what is it? And before I could even get great coach out of my mouth, D'Antonio jumped on top of me and basically said, you know, we're not here to discuss that. I'm gonna say we're here to talk about the Cotton Bowl, and we're going to leave it right there.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked down press row, and I could see all the other Michigan State beat reporters looking at me like, oh, thankfully he was the one to ask that because we didn't want to be the one to bring that up.
Yeah.
And what was fascinating about it, Al, was, it's a press conference. It's a fair question. I felt good about it. I still feel good about it. It was a question
you're being
worth
a journalist.
Asking.
I mean, yeah, you got Fred Heumann out in Ann Arbor. He's reporting on it. You probably need some material. That'd be great to get a quote from him.
Oh, of course. It made perfect sense. It was a perfect follow-up to our coverage in Ann Arbor.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly, Urban Meyer had been asked about Jim Harbaugh and said some nice things about him down at the Sugar Bowl. Nick Saban was even asked about Jim Harbaugh. I mean, this was a fair question, and Jim Harbaugh even addressed Michigan State and Ohio State at his opening presser, saying mm-hmm. they were outstanding programs, which they certainly are. But the backlash, Al, from the fan community, I don't make a habit of reading message boards because no one in the media should read message boards.
Oh, what'd you get, some tweets or something, man?
Oh, I got tweets. I heard some things. I had some links sent to me, and people were just up in arms saying how unfair it was to ask Mark D'Antonio. And I can understand D'Antonio's response. He was very sharp. He refused. He has said over and over again he doesn't want to talk about Michigan, which doesn't mean that we should stop asking him about it, because it's a historic program. It's right down the road, and as much as Mark D'Antonio doesn't want to admit it, there is a connection between the two schools. They're in the same division, they're in the same conference, they share the same recruiting ground, and their fans share the same backyard. So what he did certainly mobilized the fan base. People were excited to say, you know what, we don't want to hear about Michigan anymore. And I don't blame Michigan State fans, because the fact of the matter is, in this state right now, Michigan State is the top dog. And I certainly understand that. But as a reporter, I have a duty to ask that question. It was the biggest sports story in America. It directly affects Mark D'Antonio. He chose to answer it the way he did. And it was funny to see, Al, because people were concerned that, oh, how dare you ask him that? That's going to take Mark D'Antonio out of his zone. That's going to take him out.
They went that far to say that? Oh,
which
no.
is ridiculous, because Mark D'Antonio is a professional. He's a grown man. He right. came into that presser knowing what he was going to say about Jim Harbaugh.
Right.
And certainly he's a great head coach. And one question at a presser is not going to throw him out of his zone.
Not at all.
So it's just funny to see how people react to the. I even had people saying that was neither the time nor the place to ask that question. Well, it's a press conference. It is exactly the time and place to ask questions like that. So it was just an interesting way to see how touchy Michigan State fans are about Michigan, and I understand the history there. I understand the way that they feel. I understand that they feel like their accomplishments got swept under the rug in the last week or two just because of this Harbaugh mania. But in the end, I'll say it again, Al, until Harbaugh gets on a field and beats them head-to-head, Michigan State fans have nothing to worry about for now, because they are the top dog in this state, and they shouldn't be so touchy to these questions to Mark D'Antonio.
No, I totally get it. I mean, again, I get the question and I get the response as well. Hey, you're doing your job, Kevin. You're doing your job.
And I understand why the fans feel that way, because right. if I was a Michigan State fan growing up in this state where Michigan has dominated headlines for a century, I'd probably be saying, hey, where's the love for my Spartans?
I
do see it from both ways.
Right. So it should be a mutual understanding in this whole circle,
it
right?
It was a big kumbaya moment, and we all learned a little bit about journalism that day. And again, I've got to credit Michigan State, because they were down 20. They looked like a dead fish and somehow found a way to win that game. And it sets them on the right track to make some noise next year. It makes them one of the early contenders to get back into, to get into the college football playoff next year. And if they can find some way to go down to Columbus and beat Ohio State next year, they will certainly be in the national championship discussion.
Yeah, it's certainly a game that will never be forgotten in Spartan lore, without a doubt. Kevin, before I get you out of here, I want to get your thoughts on the Oregon.
I'm not going to talk about the Pistons.
No, let's not get carried away.
They won six straight games.
That's what I said. I mean, I'm a Piston fan, and at the same token, I know, I understand it's only six straight, and it's a long season. Great win, don't get me wrong.
Absolutely.
But still, let's not start throwing up championship banner talk here. But still, I want to get your thoughts on that Oregon and OSU game that will be taking place, national championship game. What do you think is going to happen, Kevin?
I really don't know. I don't know anymore. Oregon looks like one of the best teams in the country. I thought I saw Alabama up close and personal. I was at the SEC championship game, and they look like the best team in the country. So I really thought that they would beat Ohio State by double digits. What they've been able to do with this revolving door of quarterbacks, Urban Meyer, I mean, say what you will about Urban Meyer, he rubs a lot of people the wrong way, but he's a tremendous coach. He's great for the Big Ten, and the way he's been able to turn that program around so quickly is nothing short of incredible.
Right.
And they're just the hottest team in the country right now. Oregon has the best quarterback. They have the Heisman Trophy winner, Marcus Mariota. This is his final bow, and certainly he's going to score points. But it's hard to bet against Ohio State right now, because this is what we've always said. If there would be a playoff in college football, you would see teams getting hot at the end, making some noise, and making a run to the championship. In the past, if this had been the old BCS system, this year we would have seen Alabama and Florida State play for the national championship. Florida State would have gotten rocked, most likely, and that would have been the end of it. Ohio
exactly.
State wouldn't even been in the conversation.
Right.
So it's fun to see a team get hot at the end, make a run like this, because I'm excited to see them. I'm excited to see Ohio State. This is a team that was left for dead by a lot of people when Braxton Miller went down early in the season. People
exactly.
were writing columns. You remember that weekend, Al, September 6th.
Mm-hmm.
Michigan State losing at Oregon was the best win that day for the Big Ten. Everybody was losing.
Right.
And people left the conference for dead. So I think in a lot of ways, it's hard for fans to wrap their mind around things like this. If you're a Michigan State fan, you're rooting for Ohio State. in that championship game.
You have to from the overall perception standpoint of the Big Ten, without
exactly.
a doubt. Right.
You need the Big Ten. And in a lot of ways, people don't want to hear this either. You need Michigan to be better, too. If you're Michigan State, you want Penn State, Michigan, and Ohio State to be better programs because those are more quality wins on your schedule, and then you don't have to be defending your program as much come committee time to get into that playoff. So if I had a prediction, I'd give it to you. It sounds like a cop-out, and it is. I wouldn't be shocked to see this go either way. I think Oregon's the better team, top to bottom, but you can't argue with the hot team at the end of the season. And right. Ohio State is on some kind of run right now, man.
I tell you, Kevin, you could run for politics right now, my man. Good answer. That was a great
right
answer.
Down the, you know, I rubbed enough people the wrong way when I was down at the Cotton Bowl, so I'm going to go right down the – no, I'm just kidding.
Gotcha.
But if you're a Big Ten fan, you need to be all on the Ohio State bandwagon right now because this is all about conference supremacy, and winning a national title this year for the Big Ten, a conference that hasn't won a national title in about a decade now, this would be good for everyone involved.
I totally agree with you. Kevin, outstanding job as always. Again, Kevin Gill, sports reporter and anchor over at WLNS-TV6. He does one outstanding job. Hey, Kevin, when's the next time I can catch you on air? When's the next time you anchor?
Well, I've got a couple days off here to recover from that media hockey game, thankfully. So
yeah,
I'm go
get
home
some rest.
And go home and ice up a little bit. And I'll be back on air this Friday. We'll have another Dean Trailways fifth quarter show. Of course, Mid-Michigan's number one high school sports show. We'll be at about a dozen high school girls and boys basketball games this week. We're cranking that up again. League action starts up. And we'll be with you every Friday through the end of the NCAA tournament. So it's unbelievable. One season ends. Football officially comes to an end. The Lions, Michigan State, Michigan all done. And we're right on to something else, man. We're right into basketball season. Michigan State hoops the other night. Looked really good against Indiana.
Yeah, they
so
did.
It's time to play hoops. And I know you're excited about that because that's your game.
This is what I do. Al Jordan, baby. This is what I – but, you know, I love hoops. I love hoops. And, again, it's, you know, the work never stops for us. You know, it's one season ends, another begins, and it just keeps on going on. And Kevin, you're doing a great job. Keep
Thank
it up, my
so
man.
Thank you so much, Al. We miss you at Channel 6. You're, of course – I got to tell your audience, you know, there's a lot of big personalities and big egos in this business, but Al Martin is truly one of the good guys around here, and we miss him a lot at TV6, but we're really proud of you, and it's good to see that you're doing great work here at WKAR, and keep it up.
Thank you, Kevin. Again, I always say, you guys are my extended family. I miss you guys,
too. Well, I
taught
you everything you know.
You did.
Let's not undersell
it. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you, Kevin. Come on now. Let's be honest here. Folks, Kevin Gill, sports reporter and anchor over at WLNS-TV6. Thanks so much for joining me, Kevo. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we'll wrap up the show by talking about the Baseball Hall of Fame. How about Lansing Zone getting inducted? John Smoltz, we'll chat about that and so much more. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back, folks. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. We just finished chatting with Kevin Gill of WLNS TV6, sports reporter and anchor over there. Great insight there on the Cotton Bowl, on Jim Harbaugh. It's fantastic stuff. Again, folks, we'll be taking your calls. We've got about 20 minutes left in the show. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. And I specifically, you know, when I want to get your thoughts on a man who certainly made his mark right here in Mid-Michigan. His name is John Smoltz. He's a Waverly High School graduate. He will be inducted into the prestigious shrine of the best to ever take a baseball field. He'll be inducted to the Baseball Hall of Fame, folks, out in Cooperstown, along with Randy Johnson, Pedro Martinez, and Craig Biggio. It's actually the first time since 1955 that writers actually selected four players in 1 year to be inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. Fantastic stuff. And again, I'm sure many of you out there, because again, you know, John is from right here in this area. He had a brief stint at Lansing Catholic High School. And then, of course, went to Waverly High School, where he had a fantastic career. And speaking of WLNS TV6 and Kevin and Fred, Fred actually has the only video of that home run that John had in the 1985 Diamond Classic, Waverly versus Lansing Sexton. It's the only footage of it. And that moment is what John calls the his favorite moment in his entire playing career. It's unbelievable stuff, unbelievable footage. And you know, he was a 1996 Cy Young winner. He actually went, just looking at things here, you know, he went 15-4 that season. His overall record is 213-155 with 154 saves. And the only pitcher with 200 wins and 150 saves, folks. I mean, that is unbelievable stuff. I mean, Alex, what was your reaction to hearing about not only John Smoltz, but the entire, you know, the rest, you know, the three other players who also got inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame?
Yeah, my reaction is just, it was a matter of time. I mean, before we get to John Smoltz, Randy Johnson, I mean, that's a pitcher that changed the game of baseball. One of the tallest pitchers to ever play the game. Scary on the mound. This guy was in all kinds of movies and books and so forth. But Randy Johnson, man, I mean, that guy was fierce and gruesome to face as a batter. And that's a one-of-a-kind player. And for Pedro Martinez, he had a great career at Boston. Phenomenal strikeout pitcher. And with John Smoltz, to be honest with you, Al, I mean, he had a great career here in Michigan. I remember the wild side of John Smoltz, man. I remember watching John Smoltz. I mean, this guy was not as fierce as Randy Johnson with his kind of intimidation with his height, but this guy would beam batters. You didn't want to face John Smoltz. This guy was a madman pitcher, Al. I mean, I kind of remember that side of John Smoltz, but I also remember he was a phenomenal relief pitcher, also was a starter, like you said, played both ways. And when you look at that best moment here in Michigan, that's something that definitely leaves a mark in the community.
Yeah, that is certainly true. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, when talking about, you know, talking to different people within the community here in Lansing, those who knew John or those who played against John, those, you know, the local media who have interviewed John and had interactions with him, not only on the camera or, you know, for a story, but also off the camera, they constantly echo how great of a person John was as well. I mean, how generous he is. He was also actually, a lot of people don't know this, but he was also actually inducted into the Greater Lansing Area Sports Hall of Fame back in 1993. So he is a part of that class. So his jersey hangs up there right alongside Bob Everies, actually, who was the chairman of the Greater Lansing Sports Hall of Fame. But, you know, I just think, you know, when looking at it, and those who have even just taken a trip down there to the Greater Lansing Sports Hall of Fame, we'll actually have Bob Every on during tomorrow's current sports game. We can't seem to get him on air today. But, you know, one of the things that, you know, just strikes me when I'm walking through, you know, those halls is just how talented this area is and has become over time when it comes to just churning out athletes who are just remarkable, one-of-a-kind athletes. And now they can say that they have a Baseball Hall of Fame member as a part of their own class. I mean, it's just really remarkable. And again, you know, it's just a true testament to the talent in this area. And, you know, you're looking at the rest of this field now, Alex. I mean, you know, you bring up, you know, guys like Randy Johnson, who's a five-time Cy Young Award winner, 303 victories for him, 4,875 strikeouts. That's second in baseball history. He was selected on 534 of 549 ballots by veteran members of the Baseball Writers Association of America. You know, it's really interesting, Alex, because, you know, when hearing different conversations and reading different articles concerning the Baseball Hall of Fame, it really blows my mind how there has never been a unanimous winner. Can you believe that? There's never been one guy in baseball who has gotten 100% of the vote. Randy Johnson came close this year. He had 97.3% of the vote. Again, 534 of 549 ballots. I just don't understand how you can, you know, if you're a writer out there and how you don't pencil in a guy like Randy Johnson unanimously. Or even, you know, a guy like Pedro Martinez. I just don't understand it. That's one of the things that really blew my mind when diving into this discussion when it comes to the Hall of Fame, how no one has gotten a unanimous decision. And, you know, I was and even going into more of that discussion, you know, reading up on it, there are many writers out there who feel as though a name like a Randy Johnson, like a Pedro Martinez, so on and so forth, how they feel as though, okay, we know that that guy is getting in. I know that guy is getting in. So maybe I'm going to show my votes to somewhere else. And I believe each of them gets, I think, 10 votes, I believe. So I just don't, and it, you know, it kind of takes me back because if everybody, if every writer had that same mindset, then I think mistakes may be made down the road in possibly not getting the players that deserve to be in the Hall. I don't know. I just feel as though.
Yeah, that's a good point. But again, it's also a little bit different with baseball. I mean, look at the other guys on this list. Mike Piazza, how is he not in yet? One of the best catchers of all time on the Mets.
Yeah.
Curt Schilling, bloody sock. How can you forget?
Roger Clemens.
Yeah. Granted, some of these players have off the field steroids issues.
Yeah, exactly.
Barry Bonds, Sammy Sosa isn't even listed on here on the ESPN list, but he was there on the ballot. There are a lot of guys every year, and like you said, everyone has that attraction to their favorite player. The Baseball Writers Association of America, most of these writers have covered a certain team for a long time. And I'm sure whoever was down there in Houston loved Jeff Bagwell, loved Craig Biggio, maybe flipped his vote to get them. So that's what, like you said, Al, a lot of these guys might swing their votes a little bit to help some of the guys that they've covered over the years, or maybe some of the guys that they think are a little bit on the fringe might help. So I could totally see that side. But when you're looking at NFL and basketball, you're not looking to flip your vote. You know who really ideally you're going to vote for.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. Maybe the system needs to be changed. Who knows? Folks, 9 minutes left. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll wrap up the show. I briefly want to talk about let's just say it. He is the best fighter in UFC. Some shocking news concerning this individual that really took me aback upon hearing it. And also, we'll talk about a certain college quarterback who decides to go pro. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I remind you all that Current Sports TV tapes tonight at 6 p.m. here at the WKR TV studios. I'll be sitting down with Chris Solari, who is a Michigan State sports reporter for the Lansing State Journal. Chris and I will talk about the Michigan State football team, the Michigan football team, as well as the Michigan State men's basketball team, and so much more. If you want to be a part of that live studio audience, just simply go to WKAR.org and sign up online for free. You know, Alex, what I find pretty comical today? Or yesterday, I should say, because that's when it was released. You know, again, more than 48 hours after officials in the Lions and Cowboys wild card game really ignited a firestorm, you know, with that overturned pass interference call. I tell you what, the controversy just won't go away because the league and its officials are admitting now to the Detroit Lions that they blew a few calls in that game. More specifically, yesterday, they said that they missed a blatant hold committed on Lions defensive tackle Ndamukong Suh after the more controversial call, which was the pass interference. So they're coming out and just slowly admitting that, hey, yeah, we blew that one. Yeah, we blew that one. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that one. We blew that one as well. And it's just kind of funny to me just how something needs to happen here because it's gotten really out of hand at this point. Anytime the NFL comes out and saying, hey, we apologize, because those were moments in that game that could have totally changed the outcome of it. And, hey, I've been getting tweets from you left and right, folks. I've been getting a few comments from you left and right on our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. And, hey, I feel your pain. Even though I am a Dallas Cowboy fan, don't forget I was born and raised in the D, and I definitely would have loved if Detroit would have won that game as well. I feel your pain, and you deserve to harbor a little anger, or a lot of anger, due to what happened and transpired when it came to officiating in that game. So I'm just saying you are not wrong for feeling cheated. You're not wrong for feeling like you got dubbed out of that game, because in many regards, those were calls that could have changed the outcome drastically in that game. So I just find it, you know, the NFL, I just don't agree with how they structure their officiating once the playoffs start, because all year they're in groups. They work with a set group of individuals throughout the entire season, and then when the playoffs come, you pick and choose which guys officiate certain games, and they've never worked with each other. Some of them have never worked with each other, and the chemistry is just simply not there. That's what happened in this game, and hey, it may have just cost the Lions a chance at, you know, moving forward in the playoffs. So interesting stuff. Also, a big story that was released yesterday concerning UFC light heavyweight champion John Jones. Now, of course, John Jones defeated Daniel Cormier, defended that light heavyweight championship by beating Cormier in a unanimous decision. But, you know, before that game, John Jones tested positive for traces of cocaine before that eighth title defense, which took place on Saturday in Las Vegas. Really, really alarming stuff because it just kind of shines a light into the lifestyle that not just is reserved for celebrities, because we know there's been countless celebrities, you know, whether it be musical artists or actors or actresses who have had their battles with drugs because they are introduced to that sort of thing and sort of just get hooked on it. But, you know, John Jones, his situation, again, testing positive for cocaine, kind of shines a light and reminds us that there are a lot of athletes who battle countless battles with drugs and even some with alcohol. And, man, it was just really alarming to me because, I mean, John Jones is the best fighter in the game right now. I just don't – it blows my mind how John, you know, who, again, he admitted that he has a problem with cocaine, how he's able to do this drug but go out there and still do his job and just constantly either win by unanimous decisions or knock guys out. I mean, it's unbelievable, but I really hope for John Jones' sake that he gets back on track. It kind of just took me aback and reminded me that, hey, these may be athletes and they may be at the top of their game, but at the same time, you never know what an individual is going through. Again, he tested positive for benzoylconine, which is a metabolite of cocaine. So I really hope he gets better, but that certainly was alarming news there. And also, how about this, Alex? I want to get your quick thoughts on this. Jameis Winston will not be back, according to his father, he will not be back at Florida State next year. He decides to forego his final year, and his father says that he will instead enter the NFL draft. Do you think he's ready, and do you think he'll be a first-round pick?
Yeah, I mean, he's already projected, and with all the off-the-field issues at Florida State, this was the right move for him. I think he's already kind of in a web there, kind of a dangerous treading water stance over there in Florida State, so this is good for him. I think that he'll be a high draft pick. Will he pan out? I don't know. I'm not sold, are you?
I am not sold on Jameis Winston just yet. I mean, and you know, the thing that you have to look at when you talk about individuals in college making that transition to the NFL, I mean, the NFL is such a different, vast ball game that we've seen guys who have had vast success in the college realm have terrible success in the pro realm. So will his game transition? I think that he has to become more accurate. He's got to become better at sort of reading the defense and picking and choosing when to put it on the ground and when not to. I think that'll come. I think he will be a first-round pick, though. I'm looking at Mel Kiper. Mel Kiper, ESPN analyst for the NFL and college football, excuse me. He has Jameis as the second-best quarterback out of the whole draft. So we'll see. But again, you go back to, I think you nailed it right on the head, Alex, when talking about his off-the-field issues. He's had so many. Simming back to the sexual assault allegations to, you know, yelling in the student union, that profanity-laden crap. I think that Jameis Winston leaving now is the best move for him as a person and probably for his career. So we'll see. Only time will tell. Folks, if you didn't get a chance to call in today but you still want to weigh in on anything that we talked about on today's show, you know that all you have to do is shoot me a tweet at Al Martin, WKAR. And if you don't want to tweet me, hey, at least follow me. Again, that's at Al Martin, WKAR. Also, even go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Leave us a comment there. Tomorrow, we're going to have the chairman of the Greater Lansing Sports Hall of Fame, Bob Every, will join me. He'll share his memories on the great John Smoltz, of course, John being inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame, and he'll also give us a sneak peek preview into who is being inducted into this year's class of the Greater Lansing Sports Hall of Fame. Shout out to Kevin Gill of WLNS TV6 for joining me on today's show. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care and be easy, people.